future and where we can to break some of the limitations of how far we can go with existing approaches. So just to put an order of magnitude scale of how accurately you can measure something using power spectra, which is what galaxy surveys and the microwave background relies on, you're measuring a variance of a map, for example. And intrinsically, the statistical accuracy goes as the square root of the number of modes, which goes as L squared. So there's a fundamental limitation, which is about 1 over the maximum L, which is the maximum accuracy that you will ever get in any number statistically when you have L squared numbers. So since the CMB only has an exponential cutoff at an L of order 1,000 or so, that limits the maximum statistical accuracy you can get on the primordial fluctuations at something of order 10 to the minus 3, then you run out of steam on the number of modes that you have on the sky. So there's a fundamental limit, and we're getting there. This is quite an amazing achievement that with WMAP and with other CMB surveys, we are rapidly approaching the cosmic variance limit of the sky of what you can extract from the primordial fluctuations. If you want to think, how can you go beyond it? Imagine you wanted to know things to more accuracy, and I will touch upon some of the questions you might like to ask if you could have arbitrarily precise measurements, say 4, 5, 6 significant digits, what could you do? There are other approaches that have been that are being pursued to do precision cosmology, and hopefully they will get better. But with astronomical techniques like supernovas or measuring evolution of clusters, it is not clear whether those will really ever get better than 10 to the minus 3 either. That's it's pretty hard to measure astronomical sources of standard candles or other things to accuracies at that level. Now, if you ask, what scale is 10 to the 3? So what would be nice to get? I think a scale which would be nice to get might be 10 to the minus 5. 10 to the minus 5, because that's when you get to the second order effects. So inflation, we know the primary fluctuation is 10 to the minus 5. And 10 to the minus 5 of that will get you into seeing the next order of effects, which you know have to be there. So you could try to find new physics, try to test whether you're really dealing with adiabatic fluctuations from inflation or other things. So there's certainly, I think, a threshold around 10 minus 5 when life gets different. You can start thinking about different questions to ask. So the question is, could you ever get there, and how might you get there? Let's go into what this requires as far as telescopes go. Telescopes meaning including, CMBs basically is looking through telescopes as well. And if we look at, we're coming close to exhausting the CMB. The CMB is limited because it makes a two-dimensional map of the sky. If you want to make progress, one obvious direction to go is to make a three-dimensional map. So instead of going as L squared, you can go as L cubed for the number of modes. So that's not a bad start. Not to mention that the microwave background has a characteristic exponential damping tail because of free streaming at recombination, which other probes of matter may not have. So you might be able to go to a larger wave number. So you might be able to go up to wave number of 10 to the 6, say, in which case you would do better. So let's look at the next steps. There are several proposed surveys of matter in the universe. Based on galaxies, for example, and to make progress over what we have, we already have of order a million redshifts out there. And if you want to make a big progress, let's say you want a few more orders of magnitude of accuracy on that. How do you get there? Well, there are proposals on the 10, 20 year time scale. There are telescopes being planned and built, like the Square Kilometer Array, that will map the whole three dimensional distribution of matter in the universe to kind of the Hubble volume at fairly large price tags and fairly large time scales, but that's the big effort internationally to push for the next generation to break through how far we can see. The questions that we've been asking a bit is, are there quick ways of getting there faster? Okay, are there unconventional ways of actually mapping the universe at without waiting a long time, without paying price tags? So the two approaches I'll briefly describe. One is the epoch of organization, and one is a concept called the Hubble Sphere Hydrogen Survey. and which cover two windows. One is the low redshift up to redshift of about 2, and one is the high redshift above redshift 6. The magic numbers, why these two numbers? Above redshift 6, the universe was mostly neutral, and neutral hydrogen emits on a line, and hydrogen is the most abundant element out there, so it should be easy to detect when it's neutral. And below redshift of 2 is just close enough that you might be able to see individual galaxies. So in between life is pretty tough, observationally. Non-conventional radio telescopes. So obviously we all think of, when you say radio telescope, you think of pictures like the VLA. You don't tend to think of the other less conventional ones like the Molong Law Array. This is a one-dimensional cylindrical reflector. There's another one in Ooty. There's a couple of ones in the world. These are big telescopes. Okay, they're amongst the largest in the world. They are usually used and built for special purposes. So they do some surveys and pulsar observations. But if you want to push the economy of scale, if you want to build something large, having a linear dish is much easier to build. You can build very large collecting areas, especially if you're interested in doing a survey. You can enormously reduce your cost by not moving your telescope. If you have a transit telescope which just sits there, you can be orders of magnitude cheaper than a telescope which actually has to be able to move and do other things. So if we extrapolate on these designs and economize what we do, Jeff Peterson did that and came up with a design called the Hubble Sphere Hydrogen Telescope. So instead of having those two telescopes, the mass and cost is dominated by these support struts that to move them, and you notice the reflector itself is a wire mesh. It's invisible. So there's very little material required to actually make the collecting area. Same here. You see these are all transparent telescopes. So the collecting area itself is very cheap to build. Making it move costs money, but if you forget about making it move and just make these wire meshes suspended on wire trusses, then the cost can go down enormously. It's just building chicken mesh and building a square kilometer of chicken mesh. Doesn't cost a lot of money. And then the other cost, which often occurs, is signal processing. You have to digitize, correlate, n squared. In a linear feed, there's a convenience that this cost reduces to n log n. So again, you can reduce costs by many orders of magnitude in the both data in the collecting area and the data processing thereof. And one might be able to build these next generation capabilities at orders of magnitude lower costs and faster timescales. So we just had a paper out this week on some of these concepts of how you might get there. And in fact, Jeff is Urosh, a good old buddy theorist, has decided to invest in this telescope and has donated some money to Jeff Peterson to build a prototype, which is now happening in Pittsburgh. And basically, as I said, it's just building a big static cylinder that will collect large amounts of photons and map all the matter that way. Let me open and touch this on the next possible window to observe. So here's the universe in a cartoon. Recombination, which the CMB we've been hearing about, right? There's been the big revolution. The local universe down here. The Sloan survey, of course, has been measuring the galaxies nearby. So the second window I described is the universe when it was still neutral or about to be ionized, is this period, the period of ionization, redshift, let's say, of order 10, when the universe was still neutral. Neutral, again, when the universe is neutral, the universe is fully ionized now, so it's now is a bad time to look for hydrogen. It's all ionized. It doesn't emit on the hydrogen line. That was not the case at a higher redshift. So the universe was actually much easier to find. Now, to get an idea to what you might see, we've been pushing an effort of simulations of including radio transfer, n-bodies, so in order to, even though we haven't seen anything yet, I can give you images anyways of things that we haven't seen based on computer simulations that we've been pushing. And here's one such simulation of what the universe might look like as it reionizes. So here is a piece in the sky, and imagine that this is about a 1-degree field. It looks a bit bigger than a degree from even the back of the room. And you can see the green stuff is the neutral hydrogen. And this is cosmic web at high redshift. This is redshift 19. This is the movie going from redshift 19 to 12. you can watch the orange stuff is the ionized material, which does not emit in 21 centimeter. And one of the things that are easy to detect are these gigantic bubble structures as the universe reionizes. In principle, you can also go after the cosmic web itself, the filamentary structure. Now, that requires another two orders of magnitude more sensitivity than what we'll be able to achieve now. However, these big bubbles are fairly straightforward. So in the reionization, the cosmic weather, as Gill called it, all we have to do is observe in this band. And this is a good band to observe in because you can buy your receivers at Radio Shack. Just tell them you want 50 megahertz is channel 2 on your TV set, and 200 megahertz is channel 11. So it's very simple. Paths are next to free. The only problem is that when you try to observe, you will watch your be watching your favorite TV show and not the cosmic reionization. That's the only modest challenge in this exercise. Here's the same picture unraveled in redshift, and you can watch the reionization happen, and then the currently several experiments trying to image this patchy structure at reionization, which, by the way, to add to Gill's slides, may actually be one of the dominant sources of B-mode polarization from patchy scattering of the microwave background. So that's another thing that one has to be aware of. There's a couple of experiments. Let me show you in pictures. There's LOFA in Holland. They've been funded at the tune of 100 million euros to build a big telescope to see it. A recently funded newcomer is the Malura Array in Australia. That's also meant to look for the reionization. The VLA has been retrofitted with channel 11 TV antennas, and the PI Link in Greenhill has made a valiant effort to lobby the local channel 11 TV station to not broadcast while he's observing. He's had good success because channel 11 in Socorro is owned by a fundamentalist Christian station, and he sweet-talked them to turn off. Now, I told him, just be careful. Don't let them know that you're searching with a big bang, otherwise they might change their mind. So this is a politically sensitive issue, but this is, again, also happening. There's an array in China that's currently under construction to look for this. And then there's a search going on with the Indian Giant Meter Wave Radio Telescope. And this, again, is just has been commissioned, coming into commissioning over the last few years. This is little known, but the world's biggest telescope in aperture, currently operating. And that's another telescope with which we are trying to search for these features. So here's, there are images in the band that you want. And as I said, this is things that are happening, and hopefully when we can deal with the data analysis properly, we will be able to see the simulated images. What you're seeing here is not reionization, even though it could be. It's the right frequency to see reionization at the right angular scale. This is the same size image that I showed in simulations. These dots are not reionizations. These dots are foreground radio sources. So those are things we're dealing with. Let me just point to if the reionization pans out, well, in principle, the number of K-modes, so if you take, you can go to an equivalent L of 10 to the 5, 10 to the 6 or so, you get L cubed modes, get 10 to the 18, square root that, you might think about measuring something to accuracy, hypothetically, maybe someday 10 to the minus 8. That means you can think about things, as I said, of measuring a back reaction, of measuring higher order effects gravitationally, the origin of fluctuations. So this is my last concluding slide. Since I'm only talking about the future here, no real results yet. But I think it's a rapidly developing field, and I think that there are hopes that there will be progress in the very near future. There are several experiments in EOR and 21 centimeter underway right now. That we should be starting to think about the science that could come out with the new windows on the universe with, in principle, unbounded new information. Thank you.